Our last poet before we take a little break here is Lawrence Rivard, who is a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and he currently teaches composition and rhetoric at Webster University in St. Louis. Please welcome Lawrence Rivard.
Richard surprised me there. He told me I was last, so you'll have to pardon me for my lack of preparation here. I was expecting a break and at least one more beer, which is to say I'm slightly cowardly. I've often noticed about St. Louis that a lot of people don't want to be here. And as a consequence of that, there seem to be a lot of places in St. Louis which are about other places. That's what I've written about in these poems. The first one is Grant's Farm, which you may know about, which is a very confusing place with a beer garden, which in German is, I think, called a beer garten. In any case, I went down there and visited, and there was something which scared me about it, which was that there were zebu there. And I don't really know what zebu are, but the woman on the tour said that they were the holy cows of India. And what scared me about it was that they'd been brought here. And I was looking out in the nice pastures they have there, and there was a zebu standing right up next to a buffalo. And I was just trying to imagine, you know, this holy sacred cow from India, which it may not be. It may not be. Zebus apparently live all over the place, but some of them live in India. And, you know, the buffalo saying to him, "Hey, man, you're in the wrong place." So anyway, I went there, and there's like a children's zoo and some other stuff, and that's what this is about. And, you know, Grant's Farm was owned by Grant, apparently a great man, and also now owned by Anheuser-Busch, which brings me back to the beer, which I haven't really ingested properly. So let me quickly go through this one. I forgot to add, all of my poems are written, or at least recently, they're written by other voices that come to me sometimes. And this guy, this particular voice, is Zagig. The title of the poem is Zagig's Incantations for the Baron's Estate. A complex of suckling, flop-eared kids and children, fresh from elephant shows, brighten everyone's day. So say the macaw and the wise white-handed gibbons, who swing like no human but are related. The llama is one stroke from religion. But the trophy room is empty, as is the room of bison heads. Someone is dead. It is not the pot-bellied pig, nor the zebu, nor the fallow deer. It must be the beer baron. We all grieve for the bloated truth. They're fresh out of milk for the kids, but that won't stop the nippers and goblins at your sleeve. What on earth happened to their pupils? Why do all the signs read, "We bite"? Who made horses grow so small? Why do tourists come to a farm? For the baron's prime suburban dacha, the bratwurst, or perhaps the ride to Midwestern Heights, I came for long Civil War barrels set in a black fence as a reminder of the general's duty, oh, and for the truth of beer and brats. No one is noble like the llama and zebu, but many are well-bred, steadfast Clydesdales with names like Commander. Serf and Slav, two old men, have their pipes out again. One says, "Howdy." The goats yammer together for everyone's joy. More milk, more bread. "Thou damned barnyard seraglio! Where else is there such a fine beer garden? How long can the sun shine on flaneurs or on the rotund teams of august brewers? High, high up, the fattened cottonwoods release their gossamer on the skies. Baron and general were faithful, partial to the downy lake of living decoys, but needed more. The buffalo trophies that became teddy bears made Mark Twain laugh. Oh, busty Midwest, busy with rivers and honeys, you deserve some Zebu and a Shiva or two. Bombay, I hear, is a dread city to a Westerner. Quite real. Architects could not imagine, though. Cattle openly gnaw the silken border of its pit. Disease sweetens the air, and gunpowder. He brought their Sanskrit to our splendor. An almost Vedic tolerance foments the familiar dysentery of the tour, say of summer, or say of 1,000 years. You do not cavil at decisions of fallen logs and rotting elms and lazy elks. They fasten old uranium rods into a memorial to the falling down drunk. We will need castes and concordat. That is the protean emphatic, plum eyes and guzzling yunnans. I'm mad. Make of this a prawn salad taken prawn by prawn beneath the wisteria. Wear a white silk shirt and sandals. It's tantric, damn it. And the wished-for French fries are still so greasy. The perfect city is a suburb, Whitehaven, where old sailors return from wars with eagle feathers and bone breastplates. The sailors grew sphinx-like and drank deep, but tasted no cholera-cultured waters. A green lady in the trees, dressed head to toe in tall, likes the mystery. She's an old model with lean, tan legs, and leads her children among the fawns with pan flutes and fragrant herbs. She is the scholar of the Baron's words. The second poem is about Japanese garden in Shaw Park, which also doesn't seem to quite fit in St. Louis. That's not to say it's not a nice place, because I really, really do like it. It's called The Goldfish Incantations. I am agape for one Japanese garden and a mysterious island made by white men with capital ideas of landscaping. They called on fat carp and on the iron rake for surfaces and depths. If you pause on the bridge, you want your own name for wavers, fins, and the island, and then to walk in, tickling like the first fish or cricket, the bronze lanterns. Have you longed for a new tackle box of quips, but never a gaping mouth with a goldfish floating out? We have all chuckled at origami and soft bulges of landscaping for pointillist painstaking and flat waters without trout. The world has oval stones enough, but is not rich enough. The minds of bent gardeners skim above the mouths of fish. Go into the stir, stir mindful as the quick reeds of clarinets. I am partial to dwarf pine. You are bound to several swallows who scissor drink from sapia and mud green. Each pine has found its pose among the lily stones, and there's no use to pretend. Unless you are a green heron, there's no investment in the vertical. The fish gobble up the leafy soup with gold phosphorescent eyes. Now you want to play too, but how do the pieces move? Fallen leaves, whether yellow or red or some sad brown, make a puzzle of the path in a forest. The goldfish are like this with their smug surface and curves that rake every other curve into their brain. And the reeds make quills, and what ink you dipped into, whether pose or bonsai, refuses yellow or red or sad brown. The fish move down and flirt with their forest. There is their muck and they're alone. Go find your own definition. Thank you. Now, the other thing that doesn't seem to fit, at least for me, in St. Louis is the El Greco and the St. Louis Art Museum, because it's the only one, and I feel very sad for El Greco, otherwise known as, I'm trying to think of his name, it's something like Domenico Teotocalapatapatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatacatac in the St. Louis Art Museum. I enjoy going there, but the El Greco is really simple and distorted and hiding in a corner. And if you go there and look for it, it's St. Paul. And this is Zagig's incantations for the El Greco in the St. Louis Art Museum. Before you get to the El Greco, there's a lot of other stuff, and I kind of have to work through that first. Before you, in no particular order, bronze sculpture, a titan squatted, aristocratic furniture, a midget's buttocks, a feathered leather suit, the Kabbalah, a volcanic sneeze, and some lost Picasso. I counted the eyes and chins. Now at last comes your stigmatism, some geezer, bearded, wet-eyed, in saintly, rosy robes. We treasure halos, especially those that grow fainter around the edges, like flying saucers in videos. But you are all a nauseated gray, the medieval flesh a crawl with rebirth. Buddha is as robust as you are drawn, the wooden Buddha suppressed mirth in his cracks. The cherubs came to toy with him, but then the good guardians of neutrality put him here with you in a spare cathedral. No jelly rolls or hallelujahs here. Instead, an overpriced cafe with replicas of skinny Egyptian cats and such sells stimulus to readers silent as bottled waters, not a drop of wine. Not a spot of paint peeling where struck stained glass transmuted light. The zoo next door has habitats for God, a lion throne, an ape's armrests. But here the marble floor invites some reasonable faith, repeatedly sucked breath for an appreciative hiss. St. Paul reaches out for a long-legged miss, who moves as if fish hooks had her. What have you replaced with him that he has secular scripture at his breast? Did the Huastecs in the basement give consent? These are our icons. These souls are our farouche jaguars. Encase them near El Greco with a caption. Bring in velvet confession booths. Altars with fresh human hearts glistening. Unearth Picasso's fattest mistress and mummify her, and send Thoth along with her, and 100 slaves chiseled from alabaster, each shouldering iconography and a curse. I need the password for the eyes. Which way do the thumb screws twist? It is in his thinned universe where ordinary cats are wise and palms open, pupil, iris, and lion-like, absent a golden alphabet of hints. Thank you.